This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Koo Sitrong in the Weather Morning Run. It's time for the Property Show with Keith Kam. Now, besides ensuring you've got a roof over your head, property is one of the most stable investments you will ever make and your largest asset. But how do you ensure that what you leave behind actually goes to the people you want to bequeath your investments to? On the Property Show this week, Keith Kam talks to the experts in will writing, Azahar Iskander Hugh and Saul Leong An from Rockwills International Group.
Mr. Saul, why is having a will important?
In Malaysia, we have the Wills Act. Mm-hmm. And this Wills Act actually gives everybody a right to do something about their own assets and their family members or anyone that they love. So if you don't do that, then you're leaving it to the law, which means you just follow what the law dictates. And that's called the Distribution Act. So it's important because when you have a will, right, then you do everything in accordance to how you want to carry out what you leave behind. For example, you appoint executor of your choice because this person is someone who will carry out your wishes. Like your manager, you're not around, they will, you know, close the bank account, take the money, distribute to the children. So the executor is one that is your choice. Two is, if you have young children, mm-hmm, then it so happens if the both parents are not around, you can appoint a guardian in the will whereby this guardian is somebody you know will look after their welfare, not purely on money, because, you know, there are some people, they love children, they know they can bring them up well, see. Beneficiaries of your choice. Sometimes, you know, like now, modern society, some people may be partners but not really legally married, for example.
Right.
While they are alive, they love each other. But when they are dead and gone, legally, they are not recognized. The will is where you can name beneficiaries of your choice. So it need not be just family members. It can be anyone. And then, of course, the other thing is that if you don't have a will, when you follow the law, you have to apply for letter administration. And that one is a very tedious, long process. When you apply for letter administration, you're actually required to get two guarantors. And you know in today's market how to get guarantors who will guarantee the gross value of your estate. So these are a lot of hassles which people didn't realize. If they have no will, these things will happen.
Mr. Saul, you talked about the Wills Act just now. What is included in it?
The Wills Act actually dictates how a person can do their will,
right,
and what constitutes a legal will.
Right.
So number one, it must be in writing. Number two, the person who is making the will must be 18 and above. Then it must be properly witnessed, attested by two independent witnesses. Of course, in the will, you must have like your opening clause. You have a revocation clause. Then your distribution, how you want to distribute. And then in a lot of cases, some people not aware, they can leave a residue clause. So you must have all this section in. And then plus, of course, the person doing the will must be of sound mind. That means mentally they are capable. They may be sick, you know, but as long as they are mentally still in the right capacity, then they are allowed to do the will. Let's say if I put a gun to your head and say, okay, do this will, in the will put 1 million to me, then there's undue, you know, duress, coercion. Then, of course, if it's proven, the will can be invalid. So there are these conditions listed down.
And Jay Azhar, who can be included in a will? Is it just family or next of kin or, as Mr. Saw also mentioned, partners as well?
Well, you could name anyone to be your beneficiary. Besides a person, you could name charitable organizations as well,
right,
to benefit, which we encourage a lot of our clients do, especially when they no longer have any other family members, substitutes to give to. We encourage them to give to charities, which is good for the soul.
But what's important to include in a will that if anyone needs to do a will, that's something they have to consider?
I think they definitely have to think about who's going to be the executor of the will, which is the most important person in the will, because you rely on this person to carry out your wishes. If you appoint someone who's a bit shady and not so trustworthy, then you have a bit of a problem in terms of executing, because this person will be in charge of all your assets. So he can abscond with those assets easily. Mm-hmm. Next, if you have got a minor children, it's important to think about appointing a suitable person to be guardian of the children, as well as the what we call the residue in the will, being what other assets would you like to give the remaining assets. I would like to point out as well, if you've got a lot of properties, you invest in properties that you don't plan to sell, but you plan to give it to your children, for example, it's best to itemize which child to get which property, as opposed to I give all my property shared among my five children. So the problem with that is that each and every property is going to be owned by five people.
Right.
So they will grow up, they'll get married. So imagine the fragmentation, and then they will have their own children. So each property will have tens of people having ownership to it in the future. So there will be a lot of struggle. There will be a lot of family tussle. The thing is, usually, I have the motto that I tell clients, you know, you have to remember, sometimes money is thicker than blood. Right. At the end of the day. So it's very important to sort it out clearly in the will.
Be very specific.
Be very specific, who's getting what, rather than let your children sort it out themselves, because they may not be able to do so.
Mr. Saw, from Rockwills, over 20 years of experience in this business, could you share with us the different types of wills you've seen?
Actually, will, there's only one, you know, right, where it covers what a person wants to do. But you talk about different type of wills, yes, it is the manner in which the will is prepared and what kind of instructions they want to leave inside the will. For example, like just now we mentioned about having young children. Now, young children, they cannot receive any asset yet until they reach 18. So for families with young children, what they can do is they can set up what we call testamentary trust. They create a trust inside the will. For example, if really something happened to this young couple, then the executor will automatically become the trustee because the children are too young to receive. So inside the will, then the testamentary trust, they can say, okay, for this, all my money in the bank, you hold on trust for them, pay their living expenses, pay their education expenses, okay, until they graduate. Then the balance give to them. So this is called a testamentary trust. Another type is where now it is getting more common is some people insert, they call non-contestable clause. And this one is that sometimes they know their family members are one or two a bit more aggressive and may want to contest certain things, or if they didn't allocate to certain people. So they can insert this non-contestable clause to say that if any of my beneficiaries were to challenge the will, and if they lose, right, they lose their share. I mean, if you foresee potential conflict, then they can insert this. And then there's now another one, which is very interesting, because this is something that our client themselves asked for it, and it has become a trend, that is putting words of advice and terms of endearment. So now in the will, to make it very personal, they will put inside the will words of advice to their children. Okay, right, you know, I built out this estate for you all with my hard work and my sweat and tears and all that, you know. Please treasure this and then look after each other. And then to my loving wife, thank you for all the years of support. So this makes the will very personal and it is very meaningful.
Preparations of wills, has it become very, very popular of late?
Recently, yes. These last 2-3 years, yes. Unfortunately, human nature, you know, when some tragedy happens, then people start to wake up and worry, I better do. You know, like for example, you have the Genting, the bus crash, mm-hmm, or tsunami or plane crash. Then we'll get a lot of calls and say, I'm traveling next week. Can you ask someone to come and help me to finalize my will? But overall, yes, the awareness from the last 20 years until now, I would say that the awareness have increased about 30-40%. Not all the way up there yet. I give you an example. Is that when you go to the wake now, actually, you do hear people say, you know, at the side, hey, don't know he has a will or not. You know, things like that. So it goes to show that the awareness has increased. Yeah.
It's not so pantang anymore these days.
Yeah.
In a little while, we'll find out the differences between how wills work in accordance with Sharia requirements, as well as what we do with possibly the largest asset we will ever own, property. As our conversation with Rockwills Saw Leong An and Azhar Iskandar Hugh continues, BFM 89.9. We're back on BFM 89.9's The Property Show. We are talking to Saw Leong An and Azhar Iskandar Hugh from Wills and Trust Specialists, Rockwills.
Injay Azhar, in Malaysia, where Islamic laws exist alongside civil ones, where do the challenges lie when it comes to writing wills?
For a non-Muslim, it's not much of an issue. It's about choosing who your executor is, who to be guardian, who would you want to give the assets to. For Muslims, there is a bit of limitation. Though you are free to decide who to be your executor, which preferably should be a Muslim. In terms of the beneficiary that you want to give, there's a limitation of 1/3 of the assets that you own can be given to a non-heir. For example, it could be, like me, I'm a convert, to my non-Muslim siblings or non-Muslim parents, maximum 1/3. If you don't have a non-heir to give to, if it's a born Muslim, usual pattern would be you would give your assets to the Faraid heirs, then divide among them. Well, the challenges for Muslim is that, unlike non-Muslim, where you could itemize the assets, different right. people to get different assets, you can itemize the assets for Muslim will to give to different people. However, the Faraid distribution have dictated which beneficiary is entitled to what portion of the estate.
All right.
So essentially, it's very much sharing of the assets among the heirs. So you may have one house if there are 6 heirs entitled under Faraid, so the 6 heirs will be entitled to it. If you were to write a will to say that this particular house is to be given to one of them, then you need the 5 of them, who's also entitled, to consent to give up their entitlement to that person.
Now, we move on to what most of us consider our largest asset allocation at the end of our life. That would be property. What are the challenges to leaving behind your property?
Normally, what we will tell our clients, or I would always explain to people, is number one is be very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Be very specific. Don't have too many beneficiaries. At most 3. 2 is okay, but at most 3. Even 3 or so, you may have problem because 2 may decide to keep for sentimental reason. 1 may decide, I want money, can you sell, give me my 1/3 share. So number 1, it must be specifically mentioned in the will. Of course, they must also, if it's land, especially land, the title, the full address should be there. The other thing is that when you're talking about living property is that a lot of times we always also tell people the challenge is, especially if you're living behind the wife or the mother and the children, it's always better to give to the wife first. And then when she passed on, then only if pass on the children.
It's also important to make sure that your title documents
yes.
for the property are kept safely and easily to be found. Because it will delay matters if, in the event of death, no one can find where is the title. You will have to make a police report and then only get an extract from the land office. So it's very cumbersome and it delays the whole distribution. Process. If you have a lot of property, if you're doing property investments, you're buying 5, 10, 15 properties and you intend to sell, but unfortunately death happens and you don't get to dispose all of them,
mm-hmm.
it's important to have a list of where are your investments. Where are the documents kept in terms of the S&P, the loan agreement, as well as the if they have MRTA, the insurance coverage, so that the next of kin can take the appropriate action to make claims and the executor do know where are the assets to recover from it. Otherwise, you have a situation where no one knows where the properties are. There'll be default in loan. Next thing right. you know, it's owned by the bank.
That's why you see the newspaper has reported that there's 60 billion estate unclaimed. A lot of people dare not ask their father, hey, do you have FD or not? Where do you keep your FD? You know? But the good thing about leaving property in the will is that also, when it's transferred to the beneficiaries, the stamp duty is only $10. Of course, the other transfer fee, legal fees is still the same. But at least the stamp duty is $10. That helps to save a lot. The other very important thing is that they must make sure they have proper mortgage insurance. If they don't have that,
it goes to the bank.
And if the beneficiaries cannot continue with the payment, it will be for sale and it's a sad thing because that could be the only main big asset that they own. You know?
Talking about naughty beneficiaries, a very high-profile case came up in Singapore regarding Lee Kuan Yew's Oxley Road House.
Lee Kuan Yew's Oxley Road House. I think the dispute is only with regards to the demolition of the property.
Mm-hmm.
In Malaysia, do we have similar cases? Most of our clients don't have a clause to demolish the house. They prefer to keep the house.
Okay.
This is a bit different. In our wills, mainly the beneficiaries are about one to retain the property and to see whether to rent it out, to inherit, or to sell it off at some point. So we don't have similar disputes here.
If I can add, to prevent, especially if we know that the children, you know, one or two may want to, you know, money and they don't want to stay, it's always good if the person making the will, the testator, sense that in future there could be potential conflict. Number one, it's good to brief them first, let them know, okay, this is my intention. Number two is to appoint independent executor and trustee. I mean, there are a lot of trust corporations like Rockwell Trustee, and we just follow the law and we follow what's written. So they cannot blame each other for trying to delay or anything like this.
In the event of a contest, how does someone make their will really, really airtight?
Most people, when they write their will, their families are not so complicated. But when you have a family where the relationship among your the intended beneficiaries are not so good, my advice would be for them to, number one, has they, when they write a will, don't write it close to death. Mm-hmm. That's literally digging your own hole. It's better to write it when you're healthy so that the mental capacity is not being questioned. But in case you don't have, you write at an older age or when you are in the hospital, my advice is number one, to get a doctor to verify your mental capacity. Number two is, at the time of signing the will, it's probably best to have a video recording of the will being read to you, that you acknowledge you understand it, that you know the effect of the will, and record the signing of the will together with the two witnesses, who should be independent parties as well, so that the mental capacity is not in question. It also defeats any possible suggestion of undue influence or fraudulent practices, that sort of thing.
Yeah. In addition, like you say, if a person happens to be sick but they are still mentally capable, it's always recommended that the examining doctor be one of the witnesses. So that will lend, you know, weight to confirm that he is capable. The other thing is that there are some, especially old-fashioned Chinese men, they like to give more to the son, less to the daughter, or some don't even want to give the daughter. So when they are uneven distribution, it's always good to mention why. And one of the things that is very important is unmarried daughters. There's an act called the Inheritance Family Provision Act. You must provide for your unmarried daughters. Mm-hmm. So if it's left out, then the unmarried daughter can seek compensation for maintenance, whereby the court can vary the estate size and then say allocate X percent for her if it's not given. So if the person who is doing the will, they don't have proper consultation, then it can be subject to this type of conflict and challenges.
Finally, Encik Azhar, what words of wisdom do you have for property owners?
For those who are property investors, where you have multiple properties, usually what happens is that the investor will not buy MRTA over it because it will be expensive. If the intention is to sell it in the future, even when the property owner is not around, or the investor is not around, it would be good for the investor to look at buying life insurance for at least covering 60 months of the installment, so that when the executor comes into the picture, he will have enough funds to pay for that period. At the same time, look for purchasers to buy over the property. Otherwise, if you don't have that coverage, you kind of be in a spot, it'll be a forced sale, or the bank will take it away. So that becomes a real big issue, and there will be a huge loss for the family in terms of income.
That was Keith Kam speaking with Azhar Iskandar Hugh and Saw Leong An from Rockwell's International Group. To catch up on any part of this conversation that you might have missed, download the BFM app, available now on Google Play and the Apple App Store. Next up is the 10 a.m. news bulletin, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.